Cap Figure Podcast, Episode 9. Ryan DiPaolo here with Joe Girardi. Joe, thanks. Joe, what's it been like benching A-Rod out of spite after you played Derek Jeter for an entire year when he was performing negatively as a farewell tour, and for A-Rod, you give him one out as a goodbye? Has that been hard for you to be such a vengeful little man?
Together. And I have really strong feelings for him. And this is...
Oh, Joe, actually, I'm going to have to cut you off. Aaron Judge is batting.
Swung on, hit in the air to deep center. Kiermaier back on the track, at the wall. She is gone into Monument Park. This is something you almost don't believe. Here's Aaron Judge. Here comes the judge. On Judgment Day, he homers into the Monument Park center field netting.
Try to be best, because you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe.
So that was Joe Girardi, but I had to cut him off for
more important matters.
Welcome to Cap Figure Podcast, Episode 9. I'm Ryan DiPaolo. Hi.
Hello. My name is Tom McLaughlin.
Hi,
I'm
Tom.
Also here.
Tom is here. So yeah, that was two very important, multiple things going on in Yankee world. One, Joe Girardi is a little spiteful guy, which I'll ask you about in a second. But you heard it there, John Sterling's home run call. I'm disappointed. What are your thoughts?
I'm disappointed in the home run call for sure. I think he got caught with his pants down when Tyler Austin didn't have a call. I mean, anybody could tell Aaron Judge is going to hit home runs when he comes up. But, you know, just to throw this out there, it's a Yankees world and you're living in it. So just putting that out there for you.
What does that even mean?
It means exactly what it sounds like. It's a Yankees world. The Mets are done. And
this is like fan banter.
Yeah, my team's better than yours.
Don't come disrespecting me in this house with that. You see that Mets poster that you bought me? I don't know what here come. We were talking before. I don't know what here comes the judge is. Is that like what? So Michael Kay on the radio before he found out with the home run call, they were saying like, oh, I think it has to be here comes the judge, as if it was that clear to them, as if here comes the judge is a saying that happens regularly. But I've never heard that. Where do they say that in court? Like, where the hell is here comes the judge something like?
I don't know. I mean, I guess the first thing I could think of was like maybe it's something from Judge Judy or like the People's Court.
Yeah, something like that. That's what I was thinking. Or like the Honorable Aaron or something like would be funny. Like,
but it's still, it's not funny.
Yeah, no,
either way.
It's not clever. Like, I mean,
there's so many ways you can go with Judge.
Judgment Day, which he included. And what was the other one? Judge Dread. Wait.
Judge, Jury, and Executioner.
Yeah. What about, what's the other guy's name?
Tyler Austin.
Austin Powers? I don't know, Tyler.
Yeah, that, I feel like that has to happen.
Maybe it would be, like, Ty, I haven't thought about this till this moment. He could be like, what's his name? Tyler Austin. Tyler Austin hits one. You can tie that to the bleacher. No, that's so corny. But he is that bad.
Austin Powers.
Wait, give me one off the top of your head. So it would be like, Tyler Austin, yeah, baby. Like that? But he doesn't repeat the name?
Something with Mojo.
Tyler Austin, you want a shag, baby? He would never do that.
No. So Starlight, anyway. Star bright, Starlin hit it with all his might.
Wait, that's the Starlin Castro call?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I didn't know that. I was going to ask you, what are some of your least favorite, or what are some of the corniest ones?
I think that's easily real. One of the worst.
I kind of like that. I don't know, I used to hate an A-bomb for A-Rod. That's not,
I can't stand that
like,
either.
First of all, atom bombs aren't cool. Like, it's like, you murdered nearly genocide millions of people.
I mean, I always liked the Bernie Williams one.
What was it?
Burn,
I don't know.
Baby, Burn. And I don't know. Most of them are just really annoying. I can't really listen to the Yankees on the radio because Susan Waldman just drives me absolutely
of
nuts.
Of all the miracle things, John. Yeah, John! I spoke to A-Rod. I snuck into the clubhouse before the game, and I saw A-Rod's jockstrap, and it looked very ready to go. So I'm expecting big things from him and Greg Bird this season. John, I smelled Greg Bird's underwear in the preseason. They smelled very good.
The best thing I heard her say in the preseason was, I went over and I spoke to Alex, and I said, you're more like Alex right now and not A-Rod. You're back to being Alex.
Like, her whole editorial is just like, I'm that cool with the player. Oh, yeah. That's funny. So, yeah, so this episode, I want to talk a little bit about A-Rod, and then we're going to talk about Los Yankees, speaking of Sterling and Judge and everything.
But Los Tigres.
We talked a little bit the other night on Friday about, like, your thoughts on, I think the public sentiment is that Girardi, and I agree with this, that they kind of were dicks to A-Rod, like, let him play third the whole game, like, don't, but you made the good point that the Yankees are still probably bitter. You know, they were, I forget, it's easy to forget after A-Rod's last season how adversarial the franchise and A-Rod were before, you know, when he was getting suspended. That was an epic battle.
Yeah, he called Hal Steinbrenner, like, the devil at one point, you know. And remember, he went on that whole media campaign tour against the Yankees as if he was personally being victimized,
right.
And that, you know, it was the team's fault, when the reality is, like, I mean, everybody, we don't need to rehash what he did. He seems like he's somewhat sorry for what he did, but, I mean, if I were the owner...
Well,
you're
not
an employee.
I don't
know.
A-Rod, I'm not. I think A-Rod only gets to listen every other episode, so I think that this week we can be mean about him and he won't hear it. But no, I agree with you, right? Like, the Yankees have an absolute right to be like, oh, what the hell? It's like hiring somebody. They get in trouble with this like a Wall Street guy, right? You hire this great guy, and then he gets caught of insider trading and gets suspended a year. You're going to be like, what the hell, man? We signed you this contract.
Yeah.
You're useless to me now. You broke the rules.
And in that example, the Wall Street guy then throws the whole firm under the bus and blames everybody else for
what
he did.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the Yankees are also still sort of in this playoff race, so it wouldn't be that advantageous to really have A-Rod playing third for a whole game. I just think that there was...
Wait, so you're okay with it? Like, you're cool? You really think that... Like, I almost don't buy that Girardi... Like, well, I guess so. Now that we're reminded of their adversarial relationship, you're acknowledging basically that what Girardi was saying was BS, kind of? That, like, we're trying to win is not... It only applies because it's A-Rod and because of how he's acted towards the franchise?
I'm not really sure. I think it all kind of plays into that where, like, if it were Derek Jeter in this scenario, I think that they probably would have put him on the field.
Yeah, they
which
played
they
him
obviously
a whole season, basically, and batted him second.
But, yeah, I think Girardi may be kind of caught in the middle, too, where, like, the front office or ownership has these strong feelings, and Girardi kind of overpromised without really, you know, having, I guess, the authority or whatever to do what he wanted to do.
Overpromised what? That he'd play him or sit him, you mean?
Well, because the sentiment kind of seemed like A-Rod would be playing, like, every single game up until he retired, and then...
Oh, you think
of,
that Girardi was maybe mandated from the franchise to not give him that much glory?
Maybe.
That would make sense. I mean, that would make sense, that Girardi... And that would make sense also why he cried in his press conference, and he's like, people think I don't have a big heart, I have a big heart. I mean, he's in a tough spot. He's employed by the Yankees.
Yeah.
Also, A-Rod, it's, you know, again, I don't feel that bad for once I really think about it. It's like, oh my God, as David Ortiz hits to the top deck, or whatever, it fell, but
it almost
he's a
got
God.
There.
Dude, he, earlier in the season, the Red Sox are playing in Cleveland. We're watching while we record. He's such a softball hitter. He's such a beer league. His jersey isn't even fully buttoned. He had a hoodie on under his jersey in Cleveland when he hit the last monster home run. Like as if that's not going to slow him down running the bases. But it doesn't matter. Like the great Nick Piscali said, one of my coworkers who's a meathead build. He said, one day I go for tryouts for this team, and the guy said, hey, you got a bum knee. You can't run the bases. And I go, guy, I could jog them, though. And that's A-Rod. I mean, that's David Ortiz. Like,
that's A-Rod, too. Well, oh, here's another interesting tidbit about A-Rod. So there were Vegas odds on what he would do in his last plate appearance, and all of them are obviously, like, reasonable odds, and then triple was plus 100,000.
That's funny. I you could read his lips. He said, F yeah, we can't curse on the really on the podcast, but you could read his lips when he hit the double. He got had to have been so relieved that he, like, got that. When I first saw the pitch, I didn't look at the count, and I hadn't been watching the game in context. I assumed that Chris Archer, like, in an All-Star game, gave him, like, a... But that only really happened... Gave him a cookie, but that only really happens in the All-Star game. Like, yeah. I've never heard of that. That's never happened in a regular game, right? Because players are worried about their own stats. Archer's trying to get him out every time.
Yeah, it was still a close game, and Archer having such a bad season, I mean, I don't think he's trying to give away anything to anyone.
Right.
I think he just can't locate his pitches.
Yeah, yeah. It was a 2-2 count. There's no... And it was a 96-mile-an-hour fastball or whatever. Like, so... Okay, so I guess we can review A-Rod's career as a whole another time and how great and weird it is, but it's just so bizarre, you know, him playing third for one out and him, like, he was on the Michael Kay show on ESPN Radio, and he, like, they asked him, and he was like, yeah, I went to Joe, asked him to play, and he said no, and they're like, do you think you're being treated unfairly by the Yankees? And he was like, well, I'm just thinking about my last seven at-bats. I'll have plenty of time afterwards to think about it. And there I kind of side with you, like, where it's like, come on, dude, you're making $300 million. Like, you got suspended for a year. You're not playing that well. Like, there's no unfairness. They could do what they want with you. They could have you take a poop, like, every day all year, and you should be happy.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no sympathy for A-Rod. Even now that he's kind of showed this remorse, I still, there's a part of me when I hear him talk and give these interviews to Michael Kay and to ESPN, I just hear him and I'm just, it kind of just makes me cringe because you can tell that he's a very smart individual, very aware of how other people will perceive him. And it literally, to me, just sounds like he's giving exactly the answer that we would want to hear,
yeah,
and that,
yeah,
will get him get us off his back for, you know, X amount of time.
I agree. That's what has so been so hateable about him most his whole career. Even when he was killing it, even when he was great, is that he was so seemed disingenuous. It was like maybe Jeter was a phony too, but Jeter was like a one word answer phony. A-Rod, like, maybe tried to be too much with his fake answer. I don't know. Like, you know, like that, you know. He just is so disingenuous seeming, and his answers are so calculated, and he seems like he has a team of people, like, telling him, like, answer this question like this, and that'll get you this coverage, and, like, it's always backfired until he got so ripped apart by everybody that, and then hit home runs that we were like, oh, you know what, like, you know, dude, if, thank God for him, for his, like, a court of public opinion scale, that last year happened, because, like, if he didn't have a good year last year and he came back and he sucked, he would be in even worse in the doghouse with everybody. He would stay hated, but he got lucky that we went way too far, and then the rebound, he got sympathy. Like, I think this gives him, he ends his career with a way better chance than Barry Bonds or Clemens, who ended in the middle of their steroid, right? Mm-hmm. They didn't have a last season of some quote-unquote redemption where everybody thought they were clean and they got to, like, do it right for a season.
Right.
Right? A-Rod got that.
And he, even to a lot of people, he becomes a sympathetic character after this past week, you know, when you're talking
right,
about
right.
People kind of feel bad for him. So if
right.
The Yankees ownership has this master plan, it sort of kind of backfired on them. But yeah, that is kind of crazy that, you know, I agree with you. A-Rod has a much better chance than Bonds or Clemens of getting into the museum known as the Hall of Fame.
And I think that's because of this last year, our last year. Like,
yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, and even aside from the Hall of Fame, it's like just the court of public opinion. What a good rebound, like, because, yeah, he became a sympathetic figure, but nobody feels bad for Bonds or Clemens for being standoffish. So, anyway, I mean, I guess we'll wrap up on the A-Rod talk, but any unbelievable, any other things you want to say about A-Rod?
There's not really much that hasn't been covered.
That sucks. You got to play him for. It's not like how much worse would he be than Chase Headley? Like, I don't know. I don't get it. I know you're a Yankee fan and you want to win games, but like, there's so many people. I don't know. But then again, you don't owe him anything. You owe him $300 million, so you don't owe him anything. And there's no reason to feel bad for him. He, you know, in hindsight, now that we've talked about it, I came into this feeling bad for him and feeling like I hated Joe Girardi, and I still kind of do, but now I don't feel as bad for A-Rod. He got me. His PR, his whole team of spin doctors with his answers got me to feel bad for him. I got tricked. Every time I feel like when I laugh at commercials for, like, Progressive or State Farm, I'm like, damn it, they got me. A-Rod got me. Okay, so we're going to talk about Los Yankees and their, I don't know what their future looks like. You know, we heard the Aaron Judge and the Kirby Yates. What's the guy's name? I keep forgetting
his name.
Tyler
Austin.
Tyler Austin, same thing. They're back-to-back home runs, and Aaron Judge hit another home run yesterday.
Yeah, Aaron Judge hit another home run, and Gary Sanchez hit a home run yesterday. They lost 12-3, but I don't really care about that.
Well,
Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez both hit a home run. Mark that date.
Well, so then you just to tie it back to A-Rod for a sec, you don't care about winning. You just care about the future.
I was just trolling right there because they lost 12-3.
Yeah.
I'm still happy that they both hit home runs.
I mean, no, I'm happy for you that you get to have the experience that I've had the last 2 years, like
relevant like baseball,
or just even not even if the scores aren't relevant right away. Like 2 years ago, at the end of the year, like getting excited about DeGrom and stuff, and you know when the Mets weren't going anywhere, but he was Rookie of the Year and stuff, and like you know checking Lucas Duda's home runs and I don't know whatever Conforto last year, this year.
Yeah,
it's like so much fun to have a player who's young on the way up to check their stats every game.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. I mean, I am back interested in Yankee baseball. I want to watch the games now. I'm interested in looking at the minor league stats, and what a turn of events, you know, and what a positive outcome for the Yankees, for their ownership, for baseball operations. They, you know, 2 months ago, I think that they really hit kind of rock bottom where people were fed up with the lineup. You know, the only thing that was exciting was the bullpen.
Right.
And there was just really no optimism outside of, okay, we're going to wait until 2018 and get Bryce Harper.
No, yeah, even coming into this season, I felt even before 2 months ago, I mean, maybe you had some fan optimism where you thought they could be better, but before the season, it was like, man, I'm so happy for once that I'm a Mets fan and not a Yankee fan because it's just even though our records are a bit like the same right now, it's so much more like exciting to like I said to follow players on the way up versus like Ellsbury, you know, everybody over 30 literally except what Didi, Tanaka, I don't know, like some of the
Starlin
stars.
Castro.
Yeah, Starlin Castro, like I mean, it's just like Ellsbury, Beltran, like McCann,
Teixeira,
A-Rod is like ew.
It's like
the New York Rangers in the early 2000s, like
mm-hmm.
with Eric Lindros or whatever the hell, right? Or who the hell else did this? The Nets recently, like the Brooklyn Nets is most hateable. Like trade 18 first round picks for
Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett
at the age of 39. Like,
and then they had what Darren Williams too?
Oh my God, with his horrible haircut,
bloated,
his greasy fat haircut, and his hideous panther mush on his arm, that tattoo he has. So whatever. Okay, so Brett Gardner's still on the team. What do you want to talk about, the future or the like?
So yeah, let's just go over I guess what I see management doing.
Yeah, let's see like what positions are not available for upgrade essentially or whatever.
Yeah, so you know obviously they sold at the deadline and there was some momentum being built prior to the deadline in the farm system in terms of, you know, you had Gary Sanchez almost ready to step in. You have Aaron Judge almost ready to step in. Last year, you saw Greg Bird come up and look really good at first base.
And he's injured for the year, obviously.
Right.
He's still exciting.
So you know, you have these key pieces in place, but then once those guys are up, the depth in the farm system looked a little bit shaky on the higher end. So it's like, we're going to wait a couple of years for the next group of guys to come in. But they really rounded out their farm system wholly by trading Chapman, by trading Miller. And so, you know, you see a good timeline of players at every level in the minor leagues. There's a lot of middle infielders who are elite prospects. There are a lot of center fielders that are elite prospects that are coming up. And, you know, it's never a problem to have too many shortstops who are top prospects, because those are exactly the players that you build trades around for superstars.
Right, right. That's what I was just going to say, is that it's like you were just referencing a timeline of when each player can come up and contribute, or even not. You know, it's just regardless, like a team like the Yankees easily could say Aaron Judge and the, what's the redhead kid's name from the
Clint
Indians?
Frazier.
Say Clint Frazier and Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez and one shortstop, or Didi's killing it, right?
Yeah.
That's enough of a young core four that then if you want, if you're the Yankees and you need to be good right away, you just trade these other prospects or whatever the hell, right? Trade Dellin, whatever the hell, and get good immediately, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, even those players you touched upon, the system goes even deeper than that now. And this is something that is, it's just a very, it's a strange but opportunistic spot that the Yankees were in, that they were not performing well this year, that they had exactly the asset that all contenders were looking for and were willing to overpay for. So even at the lower levels, you know, you have Jorge Mateo, who was, you know, the Yankees' top prospect prior to the trade deadline. You have Wade.
Who's Jorge Mateo? What position is he?
He's a shortstop.
Oh, oh,
he stole 80 bases last year.
Ew.
Yeah, that doesn't suck. And then they got Gleyber Torres from the Cubs in the Chapman deal. Both of these guys are at high A, and so they're a couple of years away. But there's positional depth at the important positions at Trenton and at Scranton.
Which is which? Which is triple? Which is AAA? Which is double?
Double A Trenton Thunder, Triple A Scranton, Tampa's High A. They also have a team in Charleston, and then the Staten Island Yankees. Now the big issue, we mentioned all these great position players. Starting pitching, I think, is going to be a problem for this team moving forward, and it's something that they're definitely going to need to address and kind of reallocate some of these shortstop prospects for some starting pitching arms and some proven starting pitchers, because, you know, they acquired Dylan Tate in the Beltran trade and Justice Sheffield in the Andrew Miller trade, but both of these guys are really, you know, they're still in A-ball. The jury's out on both of them, and there's no real arms that are, you know, of significant
clout or
prospect clout that are up. Like coming up.
Well,
the only one is Luis Severino, who has been absolutely smashed this year.
Like, sucks.
Yeah,
he was one of the exciting four last year. That's what we need to remember, that, like we're talking about, some of these players may theoretically be the most valuable they're ever going to be right now, right? Like,
absolutely.
Like, they're the most, you can get the most for a hot player in high A who's going to bust today.
Absolutely. And a general strategy by Cashman and a lot of the other GMs at this trade deadline, when they made these trades, they acquired, you know, high-end prospects that have sort of devalued themselves over the years. So, like, that's like
Cashman's MO, it seems, right? Or at least the deals that you and I like, that were high draft picks that are dipping a bit.
Right, yeah. He calls it, he actually uses a term straight from the hedge fund and finance world, which is a distressed asset, which basically, let's take Dylan Tate, for example.
Who is, last what position year's, is he?
He's a starting pitcher. He was the number 4 overall pick in last year's draft, right-handed starting
by
pitcher
who?
By Texas.
Okay.
You know, so at the time he is drafted, he is obviously seen as a very valuable commodity. He pitched well at you know, in his short time in pro ball after the draft last year, comes into the season as a top 50 prospect.
In all of baseball?
In all of baseball. And then this year, he just really can't locate his fastball. And so, you know, the Rangers want Beltran, and you'd rather have somebody like Tate with that high ceiling, but just hasn't really performed up to what they thought yet. He's still obviously very young, which provides a lot of value as well because he has a lot more time to turn it around.
Right. I mean, I still like the strategy with you, but I wonder if there's any study on, like, obviously for the most part, scouts are right. They're not wrong, right? So, like, the original scouting grade on the player is in the long run right over wrong, but for every, you know, guy like that or somebody like, I don't even know, like Travis d'Arnaud or like Noah Syndergaard who dipped, well, not that Noah but you know what I mean, somebody who's like,
right,
dips their value in the minors and then another team pounces after they were very high. There's like Dustin Ackles who were second overall, exciting, like, oh, that's a good flyer to take, but then they just never contribute. Like,
same with Aaron Hicks.
Yeah, right. But I, you know, obviously overall I agree with you. I like the strategy. The other thing I'm thinking now that we're talking about this is that it's cheaper to go out and buy big pitching, even though it's harder. They're harder to come by. It's still a lower price. Like the mega pitcher deals are what, scraping $200 million,
right?
And the mega position player deals are scraping $300 million and maybe $400 million with Bryce. You know, and these are the deals. This is relevant talk for the Yankees. So, and this is how the Cubs built their team. Their strategy was just, you know, draft. It was reverse of the trend with everybody else who thinks just stock up on arms. They're like, let's stock up on bats, even if they're Kyle Schwarber with no position, and then we'll buy some pitching. And they did, John Lester and Lackey.
Yeah, look at the Red Sox as well. You know, you have Mookie Betts. Andrew Benintendi.
They have a softball lineup, and then they're
Xander Bogaerts.
Right, and now they get trade for pitching.
Exactly, and I think that part of that trend has to do with, one, the Tommy John surgery trend is out of control. You know, starting pitchers are so fragile nowadays. One pitch, and your career is over. We all know that. The time to rehab, to get a real true idea of if a starting pitcher is going to project to the next level, there's just so many variables in place. Whereas, you know, you could see a guy who plays, you know, at a prestigious high school, who plays in the summer league or who plays for an SEC school, you can see them hit, and hitting is, you know, much easier to project to the next level than pitching. Pitching has so many variables involved, and, you know, the top picks who are pitchers, they generally get picked because of their stuff. You know, 97 to 100
right.
mile an hour fastball, good breaking ball. But as you know, as the league sees, the, you know, starting pitching has so much more to do with the strategy involved. Being able to hit the outside corner with your fastball against a right-handed pitcher, setting them up for the next pitch, having that game plan. And, you know, so I kind of, but looking back at it, it's just a stroke of genius by Theo Epstein to go against the grain and take the, you know, the sure assets.
I guess could it be also just genius just because it's going against the grain, just because no matter what the grain is, if you're going against it, you're getting more value.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just like in our fantasy drafts, it's like nobody's taking X position, let's just dominate that position, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But it still seems like it makes a lot of sense. Because it's working also, but I mean,
right.
It's interesting talking about prospects too, to think about, like, you know, there are a lot of players who have really good numbers hitting in the minors and then they can't hit in the majors, and it's probably the same with like guys like Matt Harvey who their whole life are used to blowing a fastball by somebody and then they can't anymore. I wonder if it's got to be the same for the hitters who hit well and then they get to the majors and it's like, oh my god, this guy has a really good game plan or whatever the hell, I don't know.
Right,
it's so crazy to predict human behavior. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah, and mental fortitude is one of the sort of traits they always talk about.
Right, how the hell
scouts.
Do you like scout makeup, like you like play a trick on them, tell them their family's dead and see if they show up in the scene immediately, or or like tell them their girlfriend cheated on them and see if they kill them or not, or if they trust their girlfriend.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what we should do when we get in the front GMs. Office.
Yeah.
That's, I think we'd have to be hired by an organization like the Padres or something to kind of do that.
Who don't care or aren't paying attention.
And let's look up the state laws on what we're able to do.
That's really good, though. No, I like that. Dude, we'll be like, hey, police department, we're the GM of the Padres. Yes, we're both the GM. Look, we're going to set up a little fake accident scene for the new Carlos Correa. Act like his family's dead. And see if he yells at you or if he just takes it and moves on to the next play.
two true outcomes, yeah. Two true outcomes.
One pitch at a time.
So
wait, where can the Yankees buy upgrades in the offseason, at least this year? Or what positions do you want them to buy upgrades?
Yeah, so the free agent market's very light this coming offseason. Obviously,
go backwards, like what areas do the Yankees need to upgrade in your mind?
I mean, starting pitching is obviously number one, first and foremost. Tanaka is looking more and more like a front end of the rotation guy.
Yeah, dude,
and
he's awesome.
That,
he's so consistent.
But I don't feel comfortable with him throwing that one game playoff. You know, they could use an ace. Everybody could. They don't need one.
You're such a fan. You're such a Yankee fan.
They don't need one, but they definitely need some more depth and some back end of the rotation starters. Now, I don't know necessarily if you can get that on the free agent market. I still have hope that Severino can turn it around and become, you know, a middle of the rotation guy. But I would say that is the first and foremost priority of Cashman this offseason, and I would not be surprised to see the Yankees package a couple of these young shortstops or a young shortstop and a young player and try to make a move for Chris Sale this offseason.
Something like that makes sense. I mean, I wonder who are the other, I forget the list, but there are very few like free, especially with Strasburg being signed away. Pomerantz is not a free agent. What's his name?
Rich Hill
is going to be. There's like a handful, and he's hurt again. Yeah, I mean, Severino maybe. Who else? Is CC still under contract? Sorry, I'm all
CC
over the place.
He's going to be back next year unless he has a shoulder injury.
But he's still, you know, we did an episode on him. He's still been the role. He's been as good as you could hope at this point in his career, right? Like, he's been like a fourth starter, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely. And when you look into his numbers, his ERA is a little bit better than his FIP and his XFIP, which show that maybe he has been getting...
Yeah, he's been getting no strikeouts. He's just getting a lot of groundouts or whatever.
But, yeah, I mean, I'll take what CC has brought to the table.
Pineda, you need to really, like, do some of my mental tests on. He'll fail in a second, obviously, because you watch any Yankee game, and he gives up a home run throwing a slider that doesn't break to a lefty or whatever, right? And then he just flips out. You could see him like angry, and then he's giving up five runs that inning. But then he's awesome sometimes. But he needs some mental makeup. I really think the Yankees should tell him his family's dead and strengthen his mind.
That'll do it. Yeah, I mean Pineda is such a frustrating player as a Yankee fan because
he's like the Puig of pitchers.
Exactly. He shows some promise. He was the rookie of the year from Seattle. You know, he comes to the Yankees, puts together a good stretch, gets injured.
Then he has like the 16 strikeout game
and then gets injured.
Has pine tar on his neck.
Yeah, and it's I think he can be a starting pitcher in this league. But man, he is frustrating to watch because he does exactly what you're saying. He just leaves the ball right over the middle of the plate, and he gives up some hit. You could see him get frustrated. It carries over to the next batter, and then, you know, you have a ball deposited into the upper deck in right field, and then he's standing there just steaming.
With his hat sideways like an idiot.
Yeah, he takes his hat off, he rubs his sweat off his head, and then puts his hat back on sideways and goes, oh.
Is that what the sound you picture him making?
Yeah.
Oh. He goes, oh. Like an Asian man. Like, oh. He picked that up from Tanaka. You know, just going back to, you know, talking about the rotation, we referenced Tanaka and how consistent he is, and we've talked about it a couple times. He, you know, and he's like top 10 objectively by every metric in the AL in pitching. He's probably top 5. But he, it's amazing that for all the calls to the radio stations and all the frustration that, what is he doing? He needs to get the surgery. How could he just pitch through this? Adam Wainwright's the only guy to ever need the surgery and not get it. He's been right. Yeah, and it's really funny that he is like, you're not cutting me open, and there's nothing the Yankees could do, even though they wanted to, right? It's like, this is my frickin' body, I'm gonna pitch through it, and he's fine, and he's killing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing in the back of my mind that really concerns me is that he ends up having to have this surgery right when they are really building momentum a couple of the years down the line, but you don't take a huge, significant surgery like that for preemptive measures
right in the start of
a regular season. He's fine.
And it's not like he's pitching to a 5 ERA right now. Like, if he, when he's doing bad, that talk is easier to get into and believe. But he's awesome. Like, yeah. There's no... He is like Cole Hamels or something. Like a really good... Like, yes, he's not the top aces, whatever, but he's just so freaking consistent and awesome. I love him. And his song, obviously, is our favorite on the show. So who else is going to be in the rotation next year?
Well, so that's, see, that's
those three?
The huge question is, I guess.
Those four, CeCe.
CeCe's got to be there. I mean.
Severino, Pineda.
Nathan Eovaldi just went on the DL with, I believe it was right elbow discomfort.
What is,
you
he's
know
had
what
an up
means.
And down season, right? Like, he had some stretches where he was good and then not.
Yeah, that's kind of been the story with him since he's come over is from the Marlins is. You know, he has this 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Then he, I believe he developed, it was either a cutter or a slider, and it started working really well. He put together these great stretches, but he is so susceptible to the home run ball. His fastball really doesn't have any movement
off
of it.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, yeah.
And he's just the true example of someone that, he got drafted because there was limited information about spin rate and movement on fastballs at the time because he threw 100. That's why he got drafted so high. That's why he was a touted prospect. But when it's 100 and it's straight as an arrow, big league hitters are going to tee it up, as they have by evidenced by this 1.66 home runs allowed per 9 innings.
Compared to give me another guy on like...
So Tanaka is 0.94.
Ha.
Even CeCe is 1.01.
Wow. Wow, CeCe with an 89-mile-an-hour fastball throwing to a bunch of righties.
Exactly. It's So we start off, we'll have Tanaka is obviously the number one, and then it just becomes kind of a hodgepodge of if Severino can deliver to his promise, he could be number two or number three. CeCe's going to be in there. Ivan Nova is gone after this season as a free agent. And then it gets really dicey because, like we were talking about, most of their best pitchers in the farm system are at least a couple of years away. So, you know, that forces you to go into the free agent market to compete for some, in my opinion, not... I guess I would phrase it as players that I really wouldn't want to give a lot of money to.
Yeah, I mean, also, it's not as if, like, maybe the Yankees wait, because maybe, I don't think you're going to be good next year. Maybe you'll have another year with a similar record, but it'll be an on-the-way-up similar record, right? Where it's like Greg Bird gets in and plays and rehabs, right? He's definitely going to be back in time for next year, right? He's the first baseman next year.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he was really good when he played last year. And then you have Aaron Judge and these other dudes. And you know, the only old guys now are your center fielder, your left fielder, your catcher, and the best contract of all time in Chase Headley.
Well, I knew that you were going to... I knew you were going to rip on Chase Headley, and I love ripping on Chase Headley, too, but
He got like a Swisher deal, like $56 million.
I was actually really, really surprised when I looked at the numbers on Fangraphs. And mind
Wait, let me guess. Let me just guess that his like defensive numbers are really good or something. Tell me. Go.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the dollar metric, which is approximately what you would have to pay for the player's performance on the free agent market, Headley is overperforming his deal.
No.
Yeah. And
where?
He is the Yankees' best defender by these metrics.
What's his defense stat?
6.0.
Huh.
And, you know, Didi has been a pretty solid shortstop. His defensive metric is 1.7. So Headley's actually been a two-war player. That being said, I don't feel comfortable at all having him in the starting lineup any future seasons, but he's a free agent after the 2018 season, so I would assume that he will likely be the starter for the 2017 season, and as the season progresses, he's probably going to take a backseat to one of the young guys who comes up and just be one of those typical Yankees players making $13 million to sit next to the Gatorade cooler.
That's amazing. I wasn't listening. I just did a Buster Olney. Buster Olney just says that he won't listen, and he'll be like, wow. Like, someone will say, so, yeah, I think they're probably going to do the chalk thing. And then Buster Olney will go, wow, amazing, and then ask his next question. But the reason I wasn't listening is because I just see that Ike Davis is on the Yankees.
Oh, he actually just got released.
Huh.
Because remember when they...
he sucks.
Remember when they were going through that phase earlier on in the season where it was like Teixeira was injured, Greg Bird was obviously injured. You know, Rob Refsnyder has played first base a number of times, and he came up as an outfielder. They tried to make him a second baseman. He played third base a little bit, but he didn't even have a first baseman's glove when they put him in at first base. So, like,
that's funny. He's been worth negative 0.1 win. I don't know,
right.
But it's amazing looking at the. All right, so we're almost done with this episode, but Didi Gregorius 2.4, Beltran 2.2 wins. I'm surprised. Chase Headley is third in position players on the Yankees this year with 1.8 wins above replacement by Fangraphs. That's crazy.
It's shocking. It's a sad statement, though. You know, like, the Yankees the past 2 years have been very puzzling because last year they made the playoffs.
Well, because I'll tell you right now why, and I said this last year, and I was going to mention this. The two guys who are retiring, Mark Teixeira and A-Rod, this year have been worth minus 2 wins combined. Teixeira minus 0.9 and A-Rod minus 1.2. Last year, they each had an OPS of like 900. Like, they each hit like 40 home runs, or not that many, but, you know, they were having a great season. I said that to you last year. Like,
yeah.
I remember talking about it. Like, yo, this is amazing that you're getting these this year from the both of them. I think they're the blatant reason why you made the playoffs last year, like, as far as performance change.
Right, and that kind of feeds into the point I was saying, because, like, when you look at the team rankings this year, it's still astonishing to me that we're even, you know, a couple of games out of the wild card, because in runs scored, we are 22nd in the league, and by we, I mean me.
Mm-hmm.
And then starting pitching, 22nd in ERA. So you're the 22nd best team at scoring runs.
Huh,
and
that's
you're
just
the
lucky
22nd
run distribution, huh?
Exactly. I mean, the only thing is that metric, the ERA, was isolated for starting pitchers. So when you tie in the relief pitching, which is obviously the strong point, it sort of balances out more. So let's say at best you're
like 18th or something.
Yeah, like, you know, middle of the league in pitching, but you're just not scoring the runs, which is evident if you are a Yankees fan. I think, you know, for all the great things Cashman has done, and you know how much I love positional versatility, one thing that kind of scares me with the Yankees...
Tom, I'm going to have to cut you off right there. There's very important stuff. Cap Figure Podcast, Episode 9. Didi Gregorius is at the plate. Let's listen.
Drilled to right. It is gone. A bullet line drive in the lower deck and right. Yes, indeedy. Gregorius makes Yankee fans euphorious. and uproarious.
Yes, indeedy.
Yes, indeedy.
Yes, indeed.